day, and I found myself, you know, everyone, knock on wood, I haven't had a flu or a cold in 5 years.
Wow.
So it doesn't happen very often, but I feel great all the time. But I have a few glitches here and there. But I think it has a lot to do with the cold showers. I really do. And I don't know what the physiology of it all is. I've read some conflicting reports, but I was also doing the breath work, the Wim Hof breath work, an hour a day, and doing 100 push-ups a day. But I realized after a year of that maybe I was, I don't know. I don't think you need to do 100 push-ups every day, maybe every other day.
No. So you're developing a personal regimen out of this.
Well, I think there's diminishing returns if you do it too much. Mm-hmm. But if you do it every other day, then the body has a chance to recoup, and then it gets perturbed again and it gets stronger. But if you're perturbing your body all the time, it just stops getting better. So I think that's just something I had to learn from my own experience. But to inspire me, I think I should go back to those 10 minutes. I now do about 2 or 3 minutes.
That's the extent of mine. I never do too long. And there's just nothing to do but stand there after a certain point.
Well, you can recite a poem or something. Be creative. So maybe Katina will join us. I hope to see her soon. But if not, we'll just go ahead and get started, if that's okay with you guys. It's 12:05. So maybe I should just ask how you would like to start. Or what, you know, where would you like to start? Just between Michael.
I don't mind giving a personal stance or as to where I am. I'm feeling very elated in a positive way. If you know me even in the slightest, I tend to see myself as not one to branch out. Maybe 2 years ago I would be in my home reading. I have my select group of friends and family. But recently I have experienced involvement, social involvement, to the point where now I'm in leadership roles, and there's a situation in which I need to take a proactive stance. So just came out of another meeting, an hour long meeting, to try to find solutions, and feeling pretty good about myself, doing things I never thought I was capable of. So
nice.
Yeah. I was inspired by Mr. Rogers. I watched the documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, I think. I don't know if, have either one of you seen that?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mr. Rogers, yeah.
But there was a documentary that came out maybe this year or last year.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's a stellar documentary. Which let me in on kind of the political side of what he was about, and how his kind of quiet demeanor really changed the world. And so he's an inspiration right now, to say the least. I'm wearing my red jacket.
it's those cardigan sweaters he used to wear. You know, those grandfather cardigan sweaters. They just immediately put me into a trance state whenever I saw that.
A good portion of the documentary was just about how mass media, how that type of mass media is not, at least I came to the conclusion, it's not present in our world right now. So technology in that sense is not being utilized for not necessarily just children, but someone with that type of role. I can't think of one individual. Maybe President Obama, when he was in office, was a voice for quite a few people, but for just public mass television, or I guess it's hard to decide where to go. Do you go on Netflix and start a show or something like that, but there's not one show or individual I can think of that serves as a kind of a liaison between that quiet yet powerful position, if that makes sense. So that's where I'm at right now.
Quiet and powerful, Mr. Rogers. And I am elated in a positive way. And you mentioned social involvement, leadership, a proactive stance. And Caitlin showed us how she was working with how to like keep a clean language session on track. And she puts right here in the middle circle, whatever the client is working with. She'll ask a question, put it here, the response, ask another question, put the response here, and then go back. And my feeling is, just from listening to you, I would love to work with this. I am elated in a positive way. I'm going to write this down. I am elated in a positive way. I'm going to get you, Michael, to get you to your clean start.
Don't worry about it, John. Don't worry about it.
Can you see this, guys?
Yeah, I can see it, John.
Mm-hmm. And you can see it, Doug. Now, that would be her strategy, which I find is a very useful one, is just to ask clean questions, write down the response, ask a clean question about that response, ask another question about that response. So you're three out. Then you go back and find another word. So Michael, will you co-model this with me?
Please, yeah. I'm grateful.
Does this sound good to you, Doug?
Do you mind giving Caitlin's last name if you know it?
Caitlin Walker. I posted a YouTube.
I watched that.
Yeah, she demonstrates this in a YouTube video, which I posted. Mm-hmm. She's a great trainer. I had some conversation with her. She's a trainer in the UK, but I've worked with a lot of the other major trainers of this particular practice. But she's involved her own thing, working through David Grubb's clean language. So, as you look at that, Michael, did you write this down like this?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. So as a co-modeler, I'm looking at that statement that Douglas has given us.
Uh-huh.
And what are you most drawn to in that statement, Michael? What phrase or word pops out at you?
Just elated. Elated.
Okay. Why don't you ask? Would you mind going first and just asking?
If you feel okay with that.
So just put it in the syntax.
Yeah. Let's see. And is there anything else about being elated?
Can I ask you to pause?
Yes.
And when?
Oh, when?
Elated in a positive way. Is there anything else about elated?
And when, what was after that? And when?
When I am
elated in a, I see, I want to focus on just elated, not positive.
That's okay. Say the whole phrase.
Oh, okay.
Say, and when all of that.
And when all that? Oh, when I'm elated, is there anything else?
Is no, right? What I wanted to say is, I'm sorry if I'm confusing you.
I'm probably just picking it up slow.
This is just a good practice.
Yes.
Once you know what the rules are, you can break them all you want.
But yeah.
It's a good thing to know what the rules are. Yeah. So if I'm getting really strict about what the rules are, it's doing how to put this
no,
in.
No, no. That.
When fine, and you always start with and.
And.
And when. I am elated in a positive way. Is there anything else about elated?
Okay. And when I'm elated in a positive way, is there anything else about being elated?
Not being elated.
Oh, elated.
Exact language.
Okay. And when, don't worry about it, because John, I just want to put something at ease with you. Mm-hmm. I look at this as we're a director and we're trying to rehearse.
Good. That's a good metaphor.
Okay. Okay, so to give you a metaphor, I'm working with this, okay? And when I'm elated in a positive way, what else about elated? Right? Yes.
It's a feeling of all aspects coming together.
Okay.
So all aspects coming together and
the feeling of all aspects coming together.
And of being heard.
And of being heard. Now, as you get proficient, you can, of course, do it your own way. But the rule of thumb is their exact language, including the if, ands, and buts. Mm. The uhs, the ahs, the whatever. Write it all down. And then take the time you need, because we're practicing now. This is rehearsal. Which word or phrase are you going to focus attention on, and then find that question?
And when a feeling of all aspects coming together and of being heard, where is coming together?
Great.
So I mentioned needing to express my heart more. So it's my mental ideas, which are really expressions of feelings, and these are strong feelings. So when the expression comes out, and the heart space. It comes out in the heart space.
So I'm going to backtrack that. And needing to express my heart more, my mental ideas and strong feelings and the expression, and it comes out in the heart space. So I'm just sharing with you, Michael, that I'm drawn to strong feelings.
Okay.
Is there something different that you're picking up on?
The first part of needing to express my heart more.
Okay.
Which,
now you can take the whole phrase, that whole phrase, or you can break it down. Is there anything else about needing? What kind of express? Whereabouts heart? You see what I mean? You could do it, each word, you can develop each word. You can take a whole phrase and develop the whole phrase. But whatever it is, put the whole phrase or the word in the sentence. So okay. It comes as a chunk at, because you're backtracking their words, they're receiving it, and they're going to organize their own system, their own way. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I just have to pause for a minute to say that I have difficulty with that part because of I wasn't able to write down and remember his whole sentence. So do you have some kind of advice about that? Because I tend to, I know I have a bad short-term memory.
This will be the best. This is the best training in the world.
Okay.
And I just do the best I can with keywords.
Okay.
It's a tricky thing. I'm listening and I'm writing at the same time. And I'm trying to stay in rapport with them. So I guess you would say it's like riding a bike. You know, eventually you get the balance and you're sailing down the street. But you had to have training wheels at first, and sometimes an adult to direct you. It's that kind of thing.
Right.
There's a lot going on.
Right.
I just want to support you in learning this, you know, at the speed you want to learn it at, because it's a lot of things are going on. So take a pause if you need to. And we're rehearsing now. And I'm looking at that whole phrase, and I picked up strong feelings. You found another phrase, and you can use that whole phrase, put it in the syntax. But when needing to express my heart more, what is the question? Anything else? Whereabouts is that? Size or shape? It's very helpful to the listener who's receiving your question that you chunk it down for them so they know exactly what you're asking them about. That's why I recommend finding a word or short phrase rather than a whole sentence. Lots of phrases in it that, and then you ask, is there anything else about that whole sentence? Well, that's sort of like, well, where do I begin? But if you ask them, you repeat or backtrack the whole sentence, and then you find that key word, then they know you're asking about that word or that phrase rather than the whole sentence. So it's really about chunking it down to something that's bite-sized so they can actually chew it and digest it and absorb the nutrients from it, rather than give them this whole big salami and force eating them. That's my metaphor.
I guess I mixed up. If I was to pick the phrase needing to express my heart more, do I read through the complete sentence that he said? Is that what you're saying, to put it in context?
Well, I would say, okay, if you want to work with that, and needing to express my heart more, is there anything else about needing to express my heart more?
I was wondering if it's because, you know, the first way we did it, you had me repeat the whole sentence, you know, that he said. And I was able to write down that whole sentence. This last one, I got strong feelings. And those are the two things I picked up on.
And he actually almost gave us a paragraph. So this is the interesting thing. They may go into a long monologue, but your job, and that's fine. Your job is to listen carefully to the language that they actually use and be able to give it, put it in the syntax. And you have to, sort of decide, okay, I'm going to go with strong feelings or needing to express my heart more. Now, which of the developing questions do I want to use? And now I know what the developing question I want to use is. I want to know what aspect of their language I want to develop. And now I just have to put it in that syntax. And when blank, is there anything else about blank? And then you have to deliver it with style.
Style will come later.
Actually, it's a hypnotic style. It's the kind you're playing back. It's almost like reciting poetry. And you have a very beautiful voice.
Oh, okay.
Actor, so
I've never been told that.
No, it's a very rich baritone. So you have a great advantage and you have a great instrument there. So it's like the way you talk to a, you know, a beloved child or a loving, you know, a pet that you love, you know, mm-hmm. you talk in a very soft and gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
That can elicit a kind of, and that soothing quality is using the language of the client can help them get into immersed in their landscape. And that's really the questions really help the person stay in their landscape.
So we're working with Gidley's voice.
Absolutely. I think that's a very good application of her model.
Okay. So I'm going to try this. I'll see how I can do this.
Thank you.
Thank you for that too. When needing to express my heart more, whereabouts is needing to express my heart more?
So we are talking about the voice now. Or I am talking about my voice. While you two were talking, I created a drawing up to this point, but it's not complete. So there's the world, information and ideas coming from the world into the headspace. It trickles down to the heart. So right now, the heart is going into the voice. So I'm giving back with heart through the voice to the world. But that part's incomplete.
And world. And info and ideas coming from heart space and heart going into voice. And giving back with heart. So, Michael, did you hear all those ands I used?
Yeah, I did.
And backtracking? Yeah. I just realized that if you have an and there, you don't have to have the, it's a good, if you have the exact words, but if, I copied it down as fast as I could. I couldn't get every word.
Yeah.
If you have that and, that's all I need to keep the connection and the flow going so that he can stay in his landscape, or his landscape can start to develop.
Okay.
And world and information and idea and coming from heart space and heart going into voice and giving back with heart. And then what happens?
There's a force.
Uh-huh.
Like Jude Caravan's Big Bang versus the Big Breath.
And there's a, sorry.
If I, maybe 7 or 8 years ago when I first started using my voice, I used it with, I compensated for my lack of previous knowledge by being forceful. I worked with troubled youth at a camp, and to reach out to them, I needed to use that powerful voice of force, the Big Bang. With my wife and children, that doesn't work. And when I get emotional, I tend to use what I have known. So I use the Big Bang, or I have used, and I'm learning to use the big controlled breath. And it's like a wind the wind box, my voice. When I open my mouth, it's a controlled voice now. It's a controlled wind rather than a force that bowls people over.
Thank you. And Michael, if you got any, did you get any key words there?
He gave
us a lot.
He gave us a lot. I was working with Voice Big Bang.
Okay. This is a, could you put that in the syntax and a voice and a big bang and then return to the center of the circle and ask about,
and being a late, I'm
is
a late.
There, is there a relationship? This is a relationship question. Is there a relationship between big bang and controlled big breath and I am elated in a positive way? You see what I'm doing? Yeah. We've gone out three times, actually four times, because he showed us a picture and I asked a few questions about that. But now can we go back to the original statement?
Yeah, right.
Then we've created a feedback loop for him.
Right. Okay, so and is there a relationship between Voice Big Bang and I'm elated in a positive way?
Yes. I'm interested in influence. How do I, or we, influence each other, especially in a positive way? The world is full of Big Bang voices in politics and in schools who are telling you what to do. So I'm elated to know that I'm capable of having a positive influence with such a small voice.
Thank you. And is this a good place to pause? Douglas?
I think so, yeah. I can keep going if we need to.
Okay. Well, we can keep going, but I'd like to pause just so we get some of the structure of we're backtracking, we're putting it in the syntax. We're not going down any rabbit holes because we're looping it back to the original statement. So we go out, three questions, and then we go back to the original statement. And now we have that original statement, we could go, I am elated in a positive way. Look how much you got, Michael, from that one word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. Excuse me for interrupting. It's a core thing with me of how words have multidimensionality.
That's right. That's right. And that's what we're doing. We're exploring the multidimensionality of that word, which he's chosen for him.
Yes, right. Even though I have my own multidimensionality with it.
Absolutely. And so we could, I am elated in a positive way. And a big bang, and their big bang voices. And I'm interested in influence. And I'm elated to know that I can have a positive influence. And I am elated in a positive way. And is there anything else about a positive way? So I could just go back to that statement and then we could go out three with three new questions, backtrack and return. So you get the principle here. Yes, this is creating a feedback loops so that now Douglas can go into his own landscape and he can you know, process and reorganize, and we're just here to keep track. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, we're all doing this on our own anyway, but it's really nice to have a person there, a presence, who's keeping track of our process for us and pointing out, oh, this is where his attention is. Where else could his attention go? And that would be my task as a modeler, is to pay attention to where he's what he's paying attention to, and then where else could he pay attention to?
Well, this reminds me, if you don't mind me stepping in, that it's actually revisiting how we were parenting.
That's right. That's right. This is right.
You know, but from an adult perception, mm-hmm. but the principle as far as how somebody else helped us pay attention to the world around us and how they interact. But as an adult, there's more agency that we work with, and respect for agency.
That's right. And it's interesting that you should bring that up, because yesterday in our conversation, where all of us were there at the cafe yesterday, and we talked about the drama triangle.
Yeah, right.
The persecutor, the victim, and the rescuer.
Right.
That dynamic we learned at the breakfast table, and the dinner table. Our parents, when they had a fight about us.
Right.
Loyalties may have been split, or we're in a fight with our siblings, or we're in a fight with others. But these are very hardwired, this drama triangle. And there's a, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But we can get off of it.
Yeah, because it's power dynamics at the same time. It's power dynamics. And just now, riffing off of you, I want to assign maybe the transmutation of those three into what would transmute into that same, a positive triangle. But the fact is, what I understand, John, is we first have to work with the negative triangle, because it's buried in us, and because of biologically, we have to challenge the negative bias that is part of us evolving, at least biologically. On the other levels, that's something else.
Well, I just one more comment, and then I will return to our major task here. But
I have a couple comments too.
I think this is an important conversation to have, because when I get in the drama triangle, it's great that others are there to assist me
to
get out of it. That's great. Sometimes, as we know, we fight, you know, there's fight, flight, or freeze. And some people don't want to get involved, and some people want to rescue somebody.
Yeah.
And I think it's really neat to know, okay, I'm trying to rescue someone, or someone's persecuting me, so I'm going to persecute them, or right. I'm going to play the victim here. So it's tantalizing to recognize these patterns, so that then you can create another alternative. And I think we demonstrated, I think, a certain amount of skill yesterday.
I do too, John. Thank you for saying that.
And I thought the whole group. I think we were learning about our group at another level. How are we going to manage these dramas? Because they're going to come up, and they're not bad. They actually give us a lot of information. Sometimes when a person's values have been violated, they will act out in certain ways to get attention. So right. We need to sort of honor, oh, this person isn't just trying to be a troublemaker. Maybe there's a value that they have that I'm not paying any attention to.
Exactly.
So Douglas, were you going to share something?
Yeah, going off of that, what you just said, the word negative
bias,
I'm thinking more of undeveloped. So I just wanted to add that. And then going back to the three concentric circles there, just within this talk, like I've actually forgotten what my original statement was about elation. So not necessarily from the modeler's point of view, but from the person there, and maybe with conversation in general, we tend, in order to not just go on tangents and continue on some thread, to loop it back around within a certain frame, really helps to gather what were the core issue is. In this case, it's whatever I uttered earlier, but with any conversation, to recapitulate is to make sure everybody's on the same page to a certain extent. So I appreciate that when you introduce the, just that simple three concentric circles, maybe one or two sessions ago, that helped me understand the basic depth of clean language. So
thank
you. That's all I wanted to say. I also have a few things I'd like to say maybe at the end of the conversation just about this process in general, but I'll say that off the record if we can.
Sure. Can we reverse roles here? And Doug, would you co-model with me, Michael? And we can use the same template. I think Caitlin calls it the target model.
Yeah, I love that language, target. Let's hit the target.
So we get three concentric circles, and in the center, we'll get a statement. It could be a desired outcome. It could just be a resource state. It could be anything. But I'm just going to ask Michael, where would you like to start?
I would like to start from my experience of being in the heat of our conversation yesterday and how to orientate to being better, skillful, better. Not, I feel I did a good job, but I want to do better. But there's a phrase from Arnold Mandel, I guess the core metaphor would be sitting in the fire. The heat when we're the heat that comes, not just the light of all our maps and all our good ideas, but people forget there's heat that goes along with light. And sometimes we have to balance the other. Sometimes I've had to work on modulating my heat and pay attention to the light, but I will not give up the heat because it's important to me. Because it helps change, it helps move forward.
And what I'm getting is I won't give up the heat. It's very important to me. And sitting in the fire. The Arnie Mandel metaphor. And sitting in the fire, would that be a good one? A phrase that we could use, Doug? That's what I'm using it. So I'm sitting in the fire and putting in that center circle.
Mm-hmm. I gathered that one along with heat, balance, change, and moving forward.
Heat, balance, change, and moving forward. So we have those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 words. So that's what we're modeling. We're working with Doug. And where would you like to go with those words? Which one or all of them or which clean question do you want to ask? And maybe we can rehearse together the syntax.
So, if I may just attempt at a starting point here. Michael, you mentioned heat, sitting in the fire, balance, change, and moving forward. And is there anything else about change?
Change has a intensity to it. It's intense. It's mixed with a certain anxiety and excitement, but it's intense mainly, but excitement and anxiety are two flavors to it. Change.
So intensity and intense. And there's anxiety and excitement and change. And when change, what happens to sitting in the fire?
It becomes an all-consuming sensation. An all-consuming sensation running throughout and around my body.
And throughout your body?
Yes.
All-consuming sensation?
Yeah. It's, I'm trying to ground it in a metaphor that, or an experience metaphorically, that it's like walking barefooted in California in the middle of summer on asphalt.
And walking barefoot on asphalt.
In the middle of summer in California.
In the middle of summer in California. And when barefoot and asphalt.
Yes.
In the middle of summer in California.
Yes.
Is there a relationship between walking barefoot and asphalt and intensity and anxiety? I think
it's all, yes, there is, and it's all one lump of clay. It's all one lump of clay. It's a lump of clay. That's the relationship.
When a lump of clay.
Yes.
What happens to sitting in the fire?
Oh, well, that's easy. I become a clay baby Buddha sitting down.
And is this a good place to stop?
Sure.
Okay.
Can I reflect on,
please?
Can I self-criticize here? So that was fun. I felt that was the first time I really understood what was going on. There are many directions I wanted to take it, or take Michael with his words. I tried to stick with the concentric, term she uses, the target.
Target model, yeah.
So I think we went from the center out one step, back to the center, then out two steps, and then back to the center again. So we took baby Buddha steps.
Which is fine, because if you know what the structure is, you can change the structure in the moment, which is what you're doing. But you knew what the structure that was provided, the template that was provided for you. So use it. And then you're in the moment, you may want to go in a different direction. But it's just basically very helpful to have a template. So as Caitlin says, you don't go into a rabbit hole.
Right.
You don't know how to get out of it. You don't know where you are and you don't know where they are, which, believe me, it's easy to do.
It is. I just want to reflect for Douglas that one of the things I'm sensitive to when people are asking me questions is how respectful they are to my metaphorical landscape. And I know that that's with that said, I know some people don't understand that. So I have to work with that myself. But Douglas, you were very respectful of my metaphorical landscape. I didn't feel like you were imposing your own.
That's very good feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just to borrow from Caitlin Walker again, her feedback model, and I think she's posted on YouTube. I'll find it and I'll post it. But when you're doing good, clean feedback, this is what I liked. This is what I didn't like. This is what I want more of. Those three steps can really prevent a criticism from turning into the drama triangle. Because sometimes you'll offer a criticism and say, oh, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way, you know, I apologize. And it's, no, it's okay, but you really, you know, you end up going right into victim, persecutor, and rescuer. So the drama triangle is so attractive to us, and I find the challenge for clean feedback is it bypasses a lot of that. And I'm reflecting with you guys, like yesterday, since this is a shared experience and a dynamic reference point, and how I use my reflection after I've had an actual experience with a group, I noticed that when Ed asked, what makes you two guys, so confident? I can't remember his exact question.
Certain. He said certain.
And I was taking that. That's what he said certain, but I realized I was inferring something else. Because I was inferring from something about his tone of voice, that wasn't what he was making a statement about. It was about, you guys shouldn't be so certain because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. That's what I was inferring. But I realized that's what I was responding to. But I have to learn how to, pay really attention to what he actually said rather than what my inference was. Okay. Now, there may have been something there or not.
Yes.
But it's really tricky.
Yes.
It's really tricky to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's part of my reflection, is how I can pay attention to what they actually do and say rather than make inferences. And I basically challenged him the way he challenged us, because mm-hmm. I think you and I were the ones who were having the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, where did we get our certainty from?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, that's an assumption you're making.
Mm-hmm.
But we all are making assumptions about each other. And
right.
Language games are notoriously slippery.
Right.
I thought it was a good demonstration of why, this is a why question, why clean language is a benefit to the group, because it helps us, you know, pay attention to what people are actually paying attention to and evade those drama triangles as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And get out of that battlefield of inferences. He said,
right.
She said, you know.
Right.
So that's a challenge for me, an ongoing challenge. And I believe this is great that we're having this space here that we can reflect upon what
yes.
happened in that conversation, so we can take a meta perspective and feed that back into the cafe. Because
yeah.
I think as we learn about our group and the group dynamics and become more self-reflexive about our own behavior,
right,
we can modulate those affects in ways that we can all benefit from.
So you opened the door. I'm glad you did, because I'm going to give my reflection. Because one of the things I've learned, John, I love the clean language, but one of the things I struggle with any language is how much my body is involved, the sensation that comes with the world, the words. And one of the things I learned, like you said, my response came from a place of feeling like I felt you getting defensive with Ed. You know, I felt that sensation of defensiveness.
That's your assumption.
But okay, and I want to work with that, because I take assumptions as orientation. People, we can't help but orientate certain ways. Mm-hmm. You know, and assumptions are intellectual. They can be fixed, but they need to be flexible too. Orientations, you know? And so, you know, one of the things with the somatic work, especially from Reggie Ray, a paying attention to not just, I have to pay attention to the words, but I need to be informed and try to listen non-defensively, even though I have the sensation, I don't like what they're saying. I don't like their tone of voice, you know? So I was trying to actually exercise a skill of clean language with what I know about listening non-defensively and working with the heat of the moment, you know? And that's one thing I was trying to work with you. And I felt safe enough to work with you. And John, we're both teachers to each other and students. And so going along with this history of all this and where it begins, because of my history, I learned very young age, with my father's permission, even though he's manic depression and he didn't like it, that I had to question, I had to push back. And that's the space I think we both are agreed is, how do we create a space to sit in the fire that sometimes comes up? I mean, we can be talking heads and be cool, but what's going on underneath in our bodies? And I felt that yesterday, I felt really elated in that I felt that even though we were in different parts of the country, there was a strong contact going on through this medium.
That's right. That's an amazing occurrence, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're using the technology in a way to, you know, to have these really embodied experiences.
Yes.
To then just sit back passively and watch what those people over there are doing, which is what I think can happen too. We just turn into a nation of couch potatoes.
But we grew up with that through the TV. Now our generation has more of an interactive with this video.
Right. And we're going, I think, to another level when we can reflect upon these discourse events.
Yeah.
And there's an archive, we can go back, and as Douglas does, and I often do, patterns and the narratives and the what happens next,
right? And
make that the new territory that the group could explore for the next cafe or the cafe after that. So I'm all for spontaneity, and I'm also realizing spontaneity doesn't happen without structure.
Well, I would concur, John, because I think you've established in some way what happened yesterday was your fault. You've established a structure for spontaneity to come up.
That's right.
Not fault, but you know, I'm just using it. But you know, and you know, if you remember, I spent 2 months listening to you guys, seeing I was lurking around experimenting to see if it was how your ways of communicating resonated with me. And then I said, oh yeah, okay, I'm willing to put my toe in, and I've ventured a little further. Yesterday was the furthest I've gone as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. But it's good to take risks, you know, and if it's a safe to fail space,
people
take risks.
Right.
If it's not safe to fail, people are just going to sit back and do the status quo and what they already know how to do.
And in my day-to-day out life, I have to be sensitive. There's people I wouldn't express myself that way with, because like you said, and this is where the semantics come in, is the reality we do have a meter of needing safety. But from my experience with trauma is it got kind of overly hijacked and conditioned in such a way that I can bring some cognitive understanding. And with that, increase my sensitivity of what is safe and what's not. And also, not to be, and this is important for me, not to be imprisoned by my sense of safety.
Right.
That became real important at one point when I was traumatized, that I needed to start, no, I can't let my need for safety imprison me.
That's right. And if I have an addiction to something, like chocolate, or, you know, whatever that might be. And I go to a party and I say, I'm addicted to chocolate. So chocolate can't be at this party because I have an addiction to it. I mean, this is absurd.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And I think that, you know, I have to feel safe. It's great. But if you're going to a party and you just say, hello, everybody, I have to feel safe. Anything anyone does here and I don't feel safe, that's not allowed. Well, this just becomes totalitarianism. So yeah, we have to be flexible. I can be safe enough. But I also have to take responsibility. If there's something that I want, I need to let people know it. And they then can have a choice about what they want to do or not do.
Well, and I think you're verbalizing my phrase of that's how we need to restructure our sense of agency especially in relationship to our sense of safety.
That's right. And I took that actually, that piece of work that we did in this forum, structure agency, how do we restructure agency? And I added to it a perplexity that I had about, the invisible and a non-physical community. And how do you, and so I sort of combined that. How do you restructure?
No, I thought it was brilliant. Especially, I'm just riffing off your word, but especially invisible, because I've totally feel my sense of safety is not always visible to me.
Right.
Again, I keep going back to that only because my heart and my brain work better when I know my root chakra is okay.
Right. I learned that from Reggie too. And so I have one more exercise. We have another half hour.
I have a comment.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, please.
So I did post just on where the Zoom video link was. I did post at the last moment a kind of agenda item, which we've essentially talked about right now. And this is based on kind of my Mr. Rogers theme of the love that he expressed for the world and trying to get that out in the world. So I posted connections, internet connections and love. Is there time and space for love online? That, and I'm not reflecting on Gidley's version of love or anything like that. The idea of love I'm talking about is the ability to express that sense of care for one another. I was going to save it till we're done, but I wanted to just thank you, John, for the passion that you have within this community for developing others within clean language. That's not solely it for expressing yourself like your cat man is an expression of that love you're trying to integrate so much. So there's not much space though for us to share that love and say, I love you, John. I love what you're doing here. And it's true, it's heartfelt. And I was listening in yesterday and I mentioned before we started the actual recording today to Michael that I love Michael and I love his role that he played, especially yesterday when, for me, when things get heated, I tend to, when I was listening, previously I would shut down. Sarcasm typically comes into play to try to liven the mood, but that's not what others want. That's what I want to have happen. And Michael read the situation perfectly in my mind and brought it to a place. So I really love you, Michael, for what you did there. And so I want to, a personal goal of mine is to express that love. At times it's not necessarily cheesy, but it's just unwarranted.
Yeah.
Or it seems like there's not that space, especially online.
Exactly.
We can't sit here and give each other hugs like, oh, that was I love you, man, type of thing.
That's hard to do online. It really is.
But there needs to be that space for expression.
Exactly.
I'm just throwing that out there that's something I'm working on. Maybe I'll lead by example. in these calls, just saying, I really appreciate what you just said there, Mark. You're demonstrating that you really have a deeper side to yourself and you're really wanting to connect with others or something like that.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. Jump into the next round.
Douglas, you gave me goosebumps, and that's a good sign.
That's very good.
Thank you.
So I proposed yesterday a modeling project, and I hope you guys will assist me with this. And maybe we can do a brief version of it in this next half hour. And I'm working with writing. And when you're writing, how do you consider a reader or audience? And this is a slightly different way of working as a clean interview. It's not working like in the interpersonal kind of thing where I'm focusing attention on their landscape and trying to create a metaphor, a metaphorical landscape for them. It's much more about exploring a skill or a resource or an ability or capacity, and what are they doing when they're doing this, so that I'm getting very high quality information and then hopefully transfer that to other persons for whom that could be of a benefit. And I think this could be a really fun modeling project, and I'm just putting it together. Because we have so many writers in this group and people who are interested in the arts, especially the voice. Mm-hmm. So I thought this would be a fun project for us to, you know, start to model together. And so I had to sort of design it and go for it and gather up enough persons that I can do these interviews with so that then I can contrast and compare these different models. And I believe it could enrich all of our practice together on this forum. I know that Doug and I and a couple of others have a writer's group. And I think it would be fun for us to share this. So Doug, would you agree to be the interviewee? And mm-hmm. Michael and I will be the clean interviewers.
Ready?
What I want you to do, now this is a rehearsal for me. So I need your support because I don't know exactly how to do this yet. I'm still learning how. I'm going to ask some questions from Doug, and then I'm going to ask you, Michael, to ask questions about me. So okay. I'm looking at Doug's process. I want you to track my process as I'm interviewing him.
Okay.
These are the kind of things I want you to pay attention to. What's happening for John?
Okay.
So what I'm going to know is how he does this, and is it transferable?
Yeah.
And what I want you to do is focus on my process of how I'm getting that. So I'm going to pause the interview at a certain point, and I'm going to invite you to pay attention to what I'm paying attention to as I work with Douglas.
Okay. And
you can ask me like, well, what is happening now, John? Is there anything else? What kind of is that? Whereabouts is that? All of those developing questions. And you can ask, feel free if you're done to ask relationship questions or whatever, just so you get a sense of how I'm making sense as I interview Doug.
One question though.
Sure.
Is this going to come after you interview him?
Yes.
Because I want to be sure I wasn't asking these questions at the time it's happening. And another one, so pay attention to what John is paying attention to.
Right.
I got that. And then you gave a list of other things that I didn't catch. I couldn't write down fast enough. What was it?
You could ask me like, well, you know, you, the intention I think behind your questions is to find out what are the assumptions that I'm making.
Okay.
And you could ask this question of yourself. What assumptions are we making about Doug?
Okay.
Where is Doug? What is Doug paying attention to?
Okay.
What is John paying attention to?
Okay.
And what's happening now? So those are the kind of that's the kind of outlook I would like you to have for this process, so you can sort of be my coach, okay? Like okay. The referee, like food at a boxing match, or you know how
they
take a few punches and then they go rest, and then the coach comes up to them and says, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, watch out for this.
Yeah.
And then you go back into the
it's a team effort.
Right. Of course this isn't a sporting event and no one's beating anyone up. That's probably
No.
Let's go back to what you're doing with the theater, the director. So you
get
to be
if I can put it in this way, if you don't mind, is you're actually a director that's in the play needs assistant director to give you feedback.
Okay, cool. That's great. If that role feels good for you, it feels good for me. So thank you. Doug. When you're writing a poem, how do you consider the reader or the audience?
It's a relationship with those that I'm directly involved with. And I want to involve the reader within the poem. A form of integration. Words they might have said, on the verge of inside jokes. I want to weave that into the story, the poem.
In words they might have said, and inside jokes, and involve the reader with the poem, an integration, and a relationship with those that I'm directly involved with. And when a relationship with those that I'm directly involved with and involve the reader, whereabouts is that reader?
They're in multiple places at one time. They can be an idea in my mind. They can be the writer.
An idea in mind, or writer, in multiple places. And is there anything else about multiple places?
They are a part of my personal world. So it goes through the mind and then through the heart, and the voice is the writing, the written. And I want to go deeper into a deeper relationship with that person through the writing.
And a deeper relationship to that person through the writing. And when I want a deeper relationship to that person through the writing, whereabouts is that person? On the inside or the outside?
Yeah. There's something higher about this person. Or say they become me, but they're both inside and outside.
And higher, and inside and outside. And when higher, whereabouts higher?
The collection, so the one voice, if I'm thinking of one voice, one individual, but the collection of individuals becomes higher when so I want to say everywhere all at once, but it's everywhere at different times and sometimes all at once.
And everywhere all at once and at different times and a collective voice becomes higher and one voice. And what determines collective voice from one voice?
The collective voice is they're like a ghost, or it becomes a ghost, but more of a Holy Ghost, a Holy Spirit. So the collective is an individual reaching at that higher space, attempting to infuse my penmanship with holy penmanship.
And holy penmanship and the higher space and an individual reaching a Holy Spirit. And when Holy Spirit, an individual reaching higher space, is there a size or shape when reaching higher space?
Comes through me as the writer into the writing, and the writing it becomes red, and as it becomes red, my words become your words, as we enter into it's intended to take us to outside of ourselves.
It tends to take us outside of ourselves, and it comes through me as a writer. And it becomes red, and my words become your words. And voice, one voice. And reaching higher space, Holy Spirit, and one voice, and whereabouts is one voice?
It's there.
Ah, it's there. And when it's there, is there anything else about one voice when it's there?
It's a layered vision. So it's when all of our powers come together. The different layers are understood as one and connected. I'm thinking the vision is the focus on vision, as we've talked about, is given its due space, but it's had its turn, and the higher mind and the heart come into play.
And not the higher,
but not the gut at this point.
And not the gut, and the higher mind and the heart.
Yeah, I'm feeling that the upper torso and the outer frontal space, somewhat above the body.
And the upper torso and somewhat above the body. And is there anything else about that upper torso when a layered vision and voice out there, over there?
Those are the core expressive methods. That's what's first coming to me right now.
Core expressive methods. And somewhere up above, and an upper torso, and somewhere up above. Is there anything else about that, up above? The voice out there, torso, upper torso, not gut, and up above.
It's a destiny or a destination.
A destination. Is that a good place to pause?
I feel complete, yeah.
I'm wanting to let you guys know that's a very good way of making a smooth sort of exit from, they can stay in their landscape, something may be happening psychoactively, and you want to encourage that. That can continue, but you're just pausing. So that continues, but we're going to pause, and now I'm going to confer with my colleague. And, you know, Douglas can hear that conversation, and he can still stay in his psychoactive medical landscape. Just so we can, it's just helpful to make these transitions as transparent as possible. So that I don't go from, oh, that's great. Now, let's move over here and have another conversation. You know, see how jarring that is? So we're just doing our best to, I'm spotting the effects there already, but the intention here is to take a pause, smoothly transition to another kind of conversation. And this is still in the clean language interview mode. So I'm just going to ask you, Michael.
Yes.
If you want to ask me a few clean questions about my process as I was working in this interview with Doug, I'd be very grateful.
Okay.
Because there's a lot going on here in my process. So.
Yes, there is. So when you were taking and when you were taking notes of Doug's answer, whereabouts was that coming from?
Okay. So you're asking me a source question? Does that come from?
Yeah, I'm asking. Yeah, did I jump? Is that not part of the structure, John?
No, just check. No. I'm just working with it. Another question, maybe I should be a little more specific, because that's a fine question, but it puts my attention somewhere else.
Okay.
That you could just ask me what's happening now.
Oh.
If you ask me.
What? Okay. what's happening now, John?
Yeah, what's happening? Okay, well, what's happening now is I'm trying to organize my model of his model.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for a location. And he's given me some concepts. And he started to give me a location, which pleased me. And because he said, he gave me a value. The relationship to that person is a value that he has. But that's not a behavior. That's a value. So I'm looking at, I'm trying to find out how he does this. So, and that's why I'm looking for a location. And he gave me one. He said it was over there, layered, a layered vision, and the upper torso,
mm-hmm.
not the gut, and somewhere up above. So he demonstrated where the voice, the layered vision, and the voice, all these different relationships. So I hope you can find a good, clean question that comes out of that.
I hope I can too. I wrote down one and I got to translate it into clean language.
Yeah.
So, and when you are in this process, John, mm-hmm. what, God, I don't know if that's a clean question. And when you're in this process, John, is there a sensation coming, a sensation? Whereabouts is that, the sensation of this process?
That's a good question, but it's not a clean question because I never said anything about sensation.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Your curiosity is great, but you have to put that aside. Don't ignore it, but just say, I'm going to put that aside and I'm going to wait because there may be somewhere along the line some sensations, but I haven't, but you can't.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, John. I take your point.
I apologize if I'm being a little too.
No, that's a good feedback to because I have a tendency to let my curiosity get the best of me. I'm like a cat that way.
yeah, me too.
Okay, so let me see.
So I'm looking for a location. So one quick question is. I don't even know how to ask it one of my own self. So I got a location. The voice was out here. It was a layered vision. Upper torso, not gut. Somewhere up here. And then a question you could ask is, and you got location. And then what happens? That would be
that's
an example of a clean question. You could come up with another, I'm sure.
Yeah, but for practice purposes, I'm going to follow that because I need practice. And John, when you have a location, what else about that location?
Great, excellent. Well, I got a location and sort of the beginning of a sequence. His gesture was out in front of him, a little up above. He labeled it a layered vision. And then he referred to the upper torso,
mm-hmm.
not the gut, and somewhere off, up above.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's the beginning of a sequence, which is, I think, a sign of a behavior. So I feel like I think this is the first step. I mean, I feel like we got the beginning of something.
Okay. And when you're feeling the beginning of something, what size and shape is it?
Good. Well, it's, that's interesting. Because I'm sort of trying it out on my own physiology as I track it in his physiology. Because he's showing me where it is. It's in front of him. It's in his chest, not his gut, and up above. So I'm just, in that sequence. Of course, it could be happening simultaneously, but he's communicating it in a sequence.
Yes.
So I don't want to decide too quickly that that's the sequence that's most significant, because there may be other factors. I'm curious about the gut that he's not including.
Okay.
But that's my curiosity.
Okay.
I don't need this gut, but I'm curious. And that's the direction I would like to go in. Is like, okay, this is what he's paying attention to. He's paying attention to the upper torso and something up above.
Uh-huh.
So I guess what happens next for me was, now that I know that he's paying attention to that, I can redirect his attention to something he's not paying attention to.
And when you're in that, when you're redirecting his attention to something else, what is it about that?
It's something about getting a complete model.
Oh, okay.
That I believe is useful for our project together, useful for him, and useful for the project. Because I'm looking for his patterns, and they may be unique to him, but I'm also looking at the same time for something that I can extract that could be transferred to other people's experience for an audience.
Okay.
We're writing a poem for an audience. So it's those are two different outcomes that I'm holding at the same time.
And when holding those two outcomes at the same time, does that have a size and shape?
Yeah, it's really very panoramic and all around me. And it's including and trans. Oh, but by the Doug, can we have 5 more minutes, or do you have to go? Okay, I just want to be respectful of our time frame, because I know we said an hour and a half. But if we have 5 more minutes, that would be great.
Okay.
So I'm getting a panoramic kind of view, and which includes Doug's, the information that Doug has given me. I'm sort of, I see a version of Doug, and I'm looking at the locations that he's given me. Mm-hmm. Okay, in front of him, where is he? I'm trying to figure out where he is in my location. But I'm sort of, he's over there somewhere. And I can sort of, okay, this is the sequence, the voice in front of him, a layered vision to the upper torso, up above, not his gut. So I'm working on that. And then I'm working, he's in this computer screen. And I believe that these are some of the fascinating challenges of working in this medium. Mm-hmm. If he were in the same room with me, it would be a very different kind of setup.
You'd be
seeing the same environment.
Yeah.
You'd be noticing the same smells, the same temperature. There would be a lot of things we wouldn't need to say that we would already know simply because we're sharing an environment, which we don't have here.
Right.
We're in different locations, different parts of the world. So it's a,
it's a different kind of environment we're sharing.
Yeah. So learning how do I learn how he learns?
Right.
In this environment is very different from learning how he learns if we were in the same room together.
Yeah. Is this a good place to pause, John?
Please. And I'm going to return. Thank you so much. I'm going to return. And that was great. And so if I return to you, Doug, just for a few more minutes. And when a layered vision in front of you and upper torso and somewhere above, what happens and not gut? Is there anything else about that gut? When a layered vision.
It's not hungry. It doesn't want anything, I don't think.
It's not hungry, and it doesn't want anything. And when gut not hungry and doesn't want anything, and upper torso, and somewhere up above, is there anything and voice in front of you? Is there anything else about layered vision?
It's beginning to weave together the beds, weave together the individual ideas into one piece of work, into one vision.
Ah, and it's beginning to weave together one piece of work, one vision. Is that a good place to pause? Great. Thank you very much. And in the next few minutes, because I know we need to wrap up, is there anything that you learning that happened today that you'd like to share?
I will just speak up that I was glad that this followed on what happened yesterday, the situation with yesterday, because the further away it gets from the event, sometimes it just gets too muddied. And so having a fresh coming back and you and I discussing it and reflecting on it at that soon gave me a lot of peace of mind.
Peace of mind. In that reflection space.
Yeah.
Great. And Doug, what was that like for you being modeled today?
I appreciate that greatly. Today, personally, I had more focus. I mentioned in the previous weeks, it's been nonstop transportation to here and there, and to remain focused has been a major challenge at times. So this is a belated apology if I seem kind of aloof in past months, but today, even if we hadn't focused on developing my own metaphors, I felt like I was going to give a wholehearted attention. So. Mm-hmm. I hope to continue that. I feel guilty when I'm not fully present.
Mm-hmm. And more focused and wholehearted. And I just want to concur that with all of you that there was, I thought our energy at our best is very focused.
Mm-hmm.
And peaceful.
Yeah.
And I would just add, pleasant.
I thank you for adding that, because I think that's something that we forget. It can be peaceful. I mean, pleasurable, pleasant.
Yeah, it can be pleasant. It can be, and it doesn't have to be a battlefield of,
no.
He said, she said, this is my view, this is your view. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity, and I hope we can keep this going, because I would like Wednesday next. I think our friend Marcus said he could join us.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be nice.
And Doug, you could help us. You could be a co-interviewer. You could help conduct the interview with Marco around writing. And I'm just posing this as a question. When writing a poem and considering your reader, I would like to model that. And then I would ask the question, and when writing prose,
mm-hmm.
How do you consider your reader? Because I'm very interested in that poetry, prose.
Yeah.
Confrontation. It could be a confrontation. It doesn't have to be.
No.
But there's a great quandary in the literary field
yeah.
around poetry and prose.
Ursula Le Guin in The Wave of the Mind talks about your questions.
That's right, yeah. She does.
And that, and it's interesting. So, but I do want to bring...
And she's a great self-modeler. She's modeling yeah, herself right. beautifully. I'm right. interested in...
Yeah.
And she's also a world-class writer.
yeah, right.
Who's published tons of poetry and prose.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So I'm interested in working with people who may not be at that exalted level.
Okay.
But who have resources and skills already that then they can... if someone's paying attention to them, activate and become more, you know, cognitively aware and somatically sensitive. So I think this is the value of this kind of work rather than just reading what Tolstoy thought about literature. Because I found all that stuff useless when it comes yeah. to writing. If you're writing and you're reading what Tolstoy thinks about world peace, it's like the best way to have writer's block. If I can just like, okay, sit down, what is it that you're doing mm-hmm. when you're doing this well?
Yeah.
Then you have a model that really has applications to, you know, the level that this person is at and where their next best step would be.
Right.
Because I feel like, I don't know how you feel, Doug, but I know a lot of us are feeling overwhelmed very often. Because there's a lot of material out there. There's a lot of different ways you could go with it. But we have to sort of be sensitive to the process that each of us has is unique.
And that's why maybe my sensitivity to that overwhelm and my work with my own personal process with trauma is understanding how that overwhelm has a subtext or an anxious energy and tension. And a lot of my work has been to turn towards that and actually work with it to kind of just not be afraid of the overwhelm.
Right.
So that I can get this almost dual focus of not being afraid to turn towards it and feel kind of have a focus that's clear but flexible or, you know, and it's been really because overwhelm makes you anxious. So, okay, well, breathe out or do what I usually look at my hands. It helps me look at my hands when I'm feeling overwhelmed and anxious.
That's good to know. So that's part of your strategy. And maybe we should model that.
Yeah.
That's a good thing we could model, help us with when you're in a stressful situation.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah. It's like when you said get out of, you know, you talk about getting on our heads. That's one thing I was thinking about, John, is there are strategies to actually enact that by just looking at your own body, because your extremities are outside your brain, but they're connected to your brain.
That's right. Fascinating. I have a book on this. I want to read that book you recommended. I think I'm going to get it at the library if I don't buy it.
Which one's that, John?
I can't remember. Is it Harlan Johnson?
Something. Yeah. It's diverse practices, diverse bodies.
Yeah, he has some book. The one I want, I couldn't find. I might have to get it online. But I'm also reading this book, Nick Pohl. He's a body worker.
Yeah.
He works with clean language. I think he did jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. But I got the Kindle version because I can't afford it now. So the Kindle, I love Kindle because I can go in and at least have a taste, you know.
I like Kindle too, but I don't like Kindle. I like the cheaper prices than Amazon, and it's vast rather than ordering a book or waiting for it at the bookstore. But I don't enjoy reading online, to tell you the truth. I like that old book, the smell of it, the feel of it, the turning the pages. I'm very attached. So thank you guys. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Doug. And this was very good. I appreciate it.
And so we're going to aim for the same time next week with hopefully Marco can join us.
Yes, that'd be nice.
And I'll add some stuff online. I'll send you guys some videos that I think are good.
This has been very pleasant, John. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Y'all have a great day.
You too.
Goodbye.
Thank you.